Hey everybody, and welcome to this very strange edition of the Playhouse Live podcast. We're coming in with a heated John, a hungry John, a hangry John. But yeah, this is Playhouse Live. First of all, let's get this out of the way. My God. This is our weekly podcast that we do live on Twitch every week here, where we recap the gaming news in the entire industry this week. We talk about it, we react to it, we rant about it. And yeah, sometimes anger rants, sometimes good rants. We'll see how today shapes up. I'm here with my...
I just spilt water on myself.
I'm here with my co-host, John.
Hello!
I am scared to ask how you're doing. I'll just assume that you've had 5 minutes to cool down.
I'm still seething. Uh-huh. I really am.
Yeah.
But the magical thing about this is I can shift real fast, and I will just do the normal thing and just push it down deep and pretend it never happened.
If you're just joining us now, or you're watching the VOD or listen to the podcast afterwards, you should know that John is coming in from his 3-hour session of Balan Wonderworld, as was ratified by me winning the bet a few weeks ago on the podcast about the review score for that. I was watching along, John. We'll talk about it a bit later. We'll go into what your reactions were. But right. My God, even I wasn't expecting that level of bad. Like, I'm sorry I put you through that.
I'm with you. Like, I expected bad.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that bad. And I think that's what kind of got me. I'm like, there's a preparedness that you're supposed to, like, we walk into with some games. This one, oh, Bubba.
Yeah.
That was okay.
There was so much going on. I was watching from the start, and then, like, an hour in, I had to take a phone call, but I kept it open. And, like, on the phone call, I had you muted, but I was still watching. And on the phone call, I had to contain my laughter because there was, like, certain scenes and your face would just light up. Like, I think the first time there was, like, just characters appearing out of nowhere and there was a parade and you, like, jump scared and I was, like, just dancing around
you. They just were there.
Oh, I nearly cracked up on the phone.
All right.
And, like, if the person on the other end of the phone asked me to explain what I was laughing at, I couldn't have.
But anyway. There are no words to explain what's going on right now.
So this is, again, where we recap the gaming news of the week. So let's get into our first story, shall we? We have some PS5 sales and juicy stats because Sony had their earnings call this week for the financial year of 2021. First off, they have announced that they've sold 7.8 million units of the PS5 despite the semiconductor shortages. That outsells the PS4, which at this time in its life cycle was at 7.6 million units, so 200,000 more roughly. Let's just start off with that bit because there's a lot to dive into here, and I want to break this down each bit. We did talk about PS5 sales, like early estimations a few weeks ago, but generally, yeah, it's amazing how high the demand for these units are, despite everything going on. And we'll cover a bit of Xbox's financials as well. They revealed that they don't do hard numbers, but they did say that hardware revenue grew 232% thanks to the Series X and S on the Microsoft end. It's crazy. Just next-gen hype that isn't dying. Remember years ago, John, whenever they were telling me about how the consoles were going to die and we all would be on our phones by now?
Yeah.
I don't think that happened.
That's the funny part, too. Like, I remember those conversations and the fear of, like, oh, crap, the phones are now more powerful, or at least getting to the point where they can be powerful and we can do everything. And consoles are going to die. No one's going to do that. No one's going to want to play a console. And then here we are. Mm-hmm. You can't find a PlayStation 5. It's hard to find a Series X as well. The Switch did banger during 2020 and still doing really well. Consoles are not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. That's what we have proven between the PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5 generations. They're just here to stay. And I, for one, am all for it.
Sony expects the PS5 to continue to outsell the PS4 in its second year despite supply constraints. So going on to sell about 14, 15 million. There's also a 22% increase in game sales from last year across PlayStation platforms. So that's like obviously driven by the pandemic and general spending across the games industry as a whole and people just being interested in games since they're indoors and they got nothing to do. So we've talked about that at length. But yeah, even so, they were like, you know why this happened. Partly driven by next gen as well, should be mentioned, obviously. People were buying games, but there hasn't been as much of a... obviously, when you're at the tail end of the generation, you have way more games coming out than at the beginning of the generation. But I think having the PS4 backwards compatibility helped as well, because you were still buying PS4 games, even if you were on this new system. 65% of all games sold last year were delivered via digital download as opposed to physical disc-based. Last year was the first year it was the majority digital download, and now it's even more. About 2 in every 3 games are now purchased digitally. Again, partly obviously driven by the pandemic, but also keeping with trends. Like, it was going up about 10% year on year anyway. I think obviously with the digital edition of the PS5, even with like limited storage space, like people are all digital. You've gone all digital this gen, in fact, since the Switch, you've been all digital with some of your consoles.
Yeah, it's been interesting too to see the trends, because I followed everyone when it came to like media in general. Mm-hmm. I remember when it was weird to like, you know what, I want to keep all my CDs, and then I got an iPod Touch, and I'm like, F it, I'm going all digital, and now we have Spotify. Same with Blu-rays. We collected movies for the longest time, and finally it was one of those, we're not watching these and they're taking up space, let's trade them in and go all digital. And Netflix and all these services have actually grown a lot, and that's been helpful with the idea of going digital. But I'm with you, like the idea of the pandemic has really helped, along with just like you said, the 10% increase year over year. So it's one of those things, like, it is so easy. Like, let's be honest, it is easy. Like, all I have to do, you and I were talking about Returnal, and I was like, oh yeah, I got to pre-order that. I hit a button and it was done.
Yeah.
I didn't have to wait in line. I didn't have to go wait for Amazon or Best Buy to deliver it to me. It's done. It's ready to go. And there's something, it's the ease of that just makes it so much better than popping in the disc. I'm lazy, I'll be honest on that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's the fear, obviously, with digital, and that Sony announced that they were closing the PS3 and Vita stores and then backtracked on it, but who knows how long it will last going into the future. Eventually, like, by the PS10, they might go like, yeah, the PS3, we just like can't keep doing it anymore. So yeah, there's always that like sort of fear of digital, like eventually your library will go away unless backwards compatibility continues forever. So it's weird in that way, but yeah, digital stores will close down from time to time. So I'm actually like leaning towards more physical this generation. I got my physical edition of the PS5. The two big games I've got so far, AC Valhalla and Returnal, I both bought physical. I'm actually going in the other direction. I'm actually appreciating the discs more than I have been, just because I'm enjoying collecting stuff. I've just this weekend bought a PS2 and a PS1 console, and like I'm looking to try and get my old library of PS2 games back that I sold way back in the day. So yeah, I'm sort of going against the trends now.
And that's the thing, I completely get that. Like it took it was a major conversation for us. So like, do we want to play? Because I've got a lot of a crap ton of PlayStation 4 games, and we were talking about it. We're just going to keep those, keep the place, the Xbox games as well. Mm-hmm. We have a disc PlayStation 5, and we're going to keep it because we don't know when we might need it. Because mm-hmm. you bring up the point of it will go away. Let's be honest. Digital games, you'll lose your games. You don't technically own anything digital. You own the right to have them on your system. It is not a full-on, you own that game. That's a common misconception for a lot of people. And it's one of those things, like, it'll go away. It's inevitable. The PlayStation 7, there's no guarantee these PlayStation 4 games are going to be played on the PlayStation 7. I'm more confident in saying whatever Xbox's next generation is, or 2 generations down, 3 generations down, they're going to still play Xbox games because the architecture behind that. But I understand the physical thing. Like, I kind of question it every now and then on my end. Digital has just become easier for me, but I get why people still have it. Like, I mean, that's why we have limited run games. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. And I love that they do that, because there is a part of me in the collection aspect that I miss. Like, if I could show you, like, literally grab my camera and show you around this room, we collect a lot of stuff. So that itch got shifted over to like video game vinyls, and that's why I'm not too worried about the physical concept of video games. Mm-hmm. But I get where everyone is coming from and the fear of digital.
Yeah. This was the first, this was the really interesting start to me. I was like eating this stuff up because I've been following like Sony and the business end of it for a long time now. This was the first console launch year for Sony where the games and network services segment, which is the part of Sony that PlayStation lives in, didn't lose money. So traditionally, PlayStation consoles, the way they keep them the pricing competitive at launch is that they sell them at a loss. So it actually costs more to make a PS5 than they're selling it for right now. Same going all the way back to the PlayStation 1. They always cost more than they sold. And so normally the first year that they sell these systems, that segment of their business takes a loss with the hopes that you get as many players in as possible with the lower price point, then make the money up in software sales from royalties from third parties, from sales of your first party games, and then over the life cycle, the console becomes profitable. And PS5, again, was sold at a loss. It costs more to make than it is to buy. However, this was the first year that it wasn't, this sector didn't take a loss. And it's really because of two reasons. First reason being that while it is technically sold at a loss, it's like almost break even right now. And it's only going to get more profitable over time as these production things speed up. But the main thing this time was that PS Plus subscribers and network services were massively shooting up the revenue coming in for Sony. So like at the beginning of the PS4 generation, you had like anywhere between 5 and 7 million people signed up to PS Plus. Now you have 47.6 million.
That's insane.
Paying year on year. That's about half the like consumer base of PlayStation systems. And so not only was this year not profitable for Sony, it was the most profitable year they've ever had, and it's a console launch year. And like those PS Plus subscriber numbers, they aren't stopping. They're going to keep going, and that's like yearly income. And so like when you really think about it, most people buying a PS5, it's like, yeah, okay, $450 or whatever, but then I got to pay an extra $60, and then I got to pay an extra $60 every year I have the console, which is like 8 years for the life cycle. And then I'm not invested. I might as well buy the next PlayStation thing that comes out. So PlayStation Plus is massively important to Sony. The subscription model, obviously, Xbox are doing it on the other end with Game Pass, like subscription models, really, really lucrative. Like that's why you see them pumping in funding big games to launch day and date with PS Plus, and the PS Plus collection at the beginning of the generation, super, super important to them, makes them a shit ton of money. Oh my god. There were some additional notes as well from the Q&A that they did after when they were announcing these figures. Total gameplay time in March 2021 was approximately 20% higher than the same time last year. And so like March 2020, obviously the beginning of the pandemic, so this is the first month where you can compare gameplay hours. So even then it's still up. This is another juicy tidbit. Sony is investing a further 20 billion yen, or $183 million, to support internal development this year. This will consist of acquiring more first-party talent and forging second-party partnerships. They name-dropped the Haven Studio, headed up by Jade Raymond, that got announced a while ago, and they also mentioned the Epic Games acquisition that was from 2 weeks ago. So more and more development coming in to their first-party and their PlayStation Studios umbrella. But they also said that they expect more profits this time from their first-party development as well. So they're investing heavily in it, but they're also expecting returns.
We're out of it.
And when you look at it, yeah, you've got like Ratchet & Clank and Horizon Forbidden West already on the docket. God of War Ragnarok, supposedly 2021. We'll see.
Fingers crossed.
But even then, if it's financial year 2021, it's still, or 2022, I guess, that still makes the cut. So yeah, lots of investment coming in, lots of partnerships. This also comes off the back of Jim Ryan doing an interview where he was saying like, yeah, we're totally open to like outright acquiring more studios for our services. So yeah, a lot of investment coming.
To me, it's interesting too, like listening to like Jim Ryan will say something and then this comes out and you're like, mm-hmm. who do you believe?
Yeah.
Cause I mean, even the second party concept, like it in my head kind of goes against what Sony said. What was it like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago about, yeah, we're just going to play it safe.
mm-hmm.
and just give you what you already know. And for some odd reason, the second party, what they're talking about, the second part, that really kind of makes me go, are you going to invest in a little craziness, or are we going to go down that rabbit hole that Sony needs to go down? Or are we just going to get the tried and true, like I said weeks ago, over the right shoulder, halfway down? I don't know if I'm playing Last of Us Part 2 or the motorcycle zombie game. I don't remember what one's called.
Yeah.
So like I'm actually, this bodes well for me. I think we're going to get a lot more. I think we're obviously going to get a lot more from Sony. Sony knows what they're doing in the sense of first party. The second party thing really has me excited, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's to do with Sony likes to forge relationships over the long term, right? Obviously, PS1 is where you saw a lot, or PS2 generation as well. You saw a lot of these sort of big name studios get founded, like Naughty Dog and Guerrilla and Santa Monica, and all these studios were getting founded around then by Sony from the ground up. But in recent years, they're not taking the Microsoft approach. They're not saying, here's our big wad of cash, let's throw it at a Bethesda, let's throw it at a who makes Psychonauts. Double Fine. They are very much looking at like building relationships over time. And if you like remember, Insomniac were a second party studio for the longest mm-hmm. time, until they bought them outright. But for a while they were like developing here, developing there, doing an exclusive for Xbox, doing an exclusive for PlayStation, do whatever they want. Once Spider-Man hit, they were like, okay, we need you to make Spider-Man forever.
Go ahead.
No, I just think like if you do see more like outright studio acquisitions, I'd look to things like Housemarque or other second party things that are going if Haven takes off. I thought for a while maybe they would buy Kojima Productions, but I'm less certain on that now. But I do think internally their first party studios, their big three, Santa Monica, Guerrilla, and Naughty Dog, is their babies, and they want to take less risks with them. But I feel like they're willing to throw money at talent that they know is like reliable, like Jade Raymond and Kojima and Housemarque, and they're willing to go like, yeah, do what you want, like just let us put the PlayStation Studios tag on it.
Yeah, I agree. And like thinking about it, that Haven, I have a good feeling 10 years from now Haven's gonna be in that, we're gonna call it, instead of the big three for Sony, we'll be the big four, and Haven's gonna be in there with, like you said, Santa Monica and Naughty Dog and all that stuff. So I'm excited for the future of what Sony's going in with.
Yeah. Well, it really is a big four when you consider Insomniac as well. So, yeah, it's just
That's true. Yeah. It's weird to consider that. Like, I don't know why. And Insomniac, it's proven itself now. But I don't know why I just keep on, like, it's just that half step down, and Insomniac doesn't deserve that.
I was like, we're going to talk about it in a bit, but like looking at the Ratchet & Clank trailer, the new one, and like the Insomniac logo comes up, and that comes up, and in my mind I was just like, damn, what a purchase. What a purchase for Sony. Like, oh my god, and Sony are just killing it. Shortage of semiconductor is not the only factor limiting production of the PS5, though they didn't elaborate what the other factors are. This was to someone asking, like, hey, if the semiconductor crisis like gets solved tomorrow magically, does that mean more PS5s? And they're like, not really. But they didn't elaborate on what else is holding up. I just imagine, but just
tell us more.
General complications with production. So yeah, and yeah, obviously like worldwide pandemic stuff still happening, so that affects that as well. And yeah, just PS5 profitability will continue to go over its life cycle. As I mentioned, Microsoft also had its Q3 earnings call where they announced that hardware revenue is up 232%. Their earnings now include ZeniMax, and that big umbrella of studios for the first time as that deal's finally closed. Xbox content and services revenue increased 34%. Gaming revenue grew 50%. I was having a time of it trying to figure out what Microsoft classes as Xbox and what they classify as gaming. I could not figure out. It was like really intentionally vaguely worded. But they were talking about how like their biggest, obviously they don't have the flex muscles of their first party studios just yet, in terms of the Xbox stuff to the Bethesda studios. But they were talking about their big successes in gaming being obviously Games Pass, and then as well Minecraft and Flight Simulator. And the thing with those is like they both have like in-game like user created content stores where people are like selling stuff and people mm-hmm. are buying and Microsoft are getting a cut. I think it was like, I didn't write it down, but it's like 350 million Minecraft generated and just like,
good lord,
additional content stuff. So yeah, they were very happy about that. And yeah, Games Pass is just continuing to grow and grow and grow. And the Xbox sector was like the biggest source of growth for Microsoft as a whole in this quarter. So yeah, just really good figures coming across the gaming world. It's good to see. Speaking of Microsoft.
We were talking about all the stuff and I'm like, wait, Nintendo's earnings report is today.
Yeah, Activision.
As of recording.
Oh, is it happening today?
Yeah, it's May 1st.
I had it on my calendar. It's Thursday. I don't know why that happened.
Is it Thursday? Maybe, I thought it was...
you know what?
You're right. I don't know.
They might have released them today and then they're doing the actual like earnings call presentation later because sometimes companies do that. But I know this week is Nintendo and Activision. So we'll get to them in a bit. But yeah, more updates regarding Microsoft as they talk more about their PC business. They were giving some updates via the Xbox Wire about Halo Infinite. They said, we're excited to announce Halo Infinite will support multiplayer crossplay, cross progression when it releases later this year. They're still doubling down on 2021. We have been working closely with the PC community to ensure that Halo Infinite offers a premier PC experience, including highly desired features such as support for ultra wide, super ultra wide, triple keybinds, and a wide variety of advanced graphics options. So this was a big part of like, an Xbox blog post saying like, hey, we want to show you PC guys some love too. And when you think about the first party exclusives that they have released recently, like Age of Empire 4, Flight Simulator, Minecraft Dungeons, like they all have a PC focus. So Microsoft definitely has a love for that side of its business.
Yeah.
They were talking about Games Pass for PC. They said they're going to continue working on it. They're going to add some quality of life improvements. People were saying like, yeah, this was a long time coming. I personally like the Game Pass app and PC. I haven't had any problems with it. The one thing I could use though is that I don't know if you've ever tried to mod like a game you've played on like Game Pass or Microsoft Store. Basically what they do is you can't access the game files. They're like locked away in a hidden folder that you just cannot access. So you can't actually mod games on if you're playing on a Game Pass or in the Microsoft Store because you just can't access the files. I found this out when I reinstalled Skyrim on Game Pass because it's the Ultimate Edition. I was like, okay, I'll just install this version and then mod it. And then I couldn't mod it. And the only thing they offer is like the in-game or the in-app like paid mods that Bethesda still somehow got away with. But yeah, that would be like the one thing I'd say, like, please add that if you're going to be a PC gaming platform. And then also the big news that got buried in with it as well is that they're increasing the developer share of Microsoft Store PC games. Net revenue will increase for developers to 88% from 70%. So now,
good lord,
Microsoft are only taking a 12% cut. That is to compete with Steam and Epic and all the other game stores that are doing their stuff right now. It's interesting, like, now that we do have like actual competition in the PC gaming space, like, it's just helping developers and consumers
really
as well.
Is, you're correct.
Accenture as well, like Epic are just like tossing out free games left and right. It's nice to see. Like, I don't have to buy a whole other system, but I can still have these companies competing to win my favor. So yeah, it works out. And yeah, obviously great for developers. Anything you want to say on that? Are you a big PC Xbox gamer?
Not really. I have Game Pass Ultimate. I do have it on my I bought a new computer and it's pretty cool. I do like how it all just integrates in there, and it's the messaging. I really like the messaging that like Xbox is doing with this, because it's just, oh, if you have an Xbox, here it is on Game Pass for consoles. Oh, by the way, we have other games, different games on PC itself. And I actually think that's a really cool move. Just the idea of, like you said, like opening up that PC space a little bit more. And I mean, competition breeds quality. And it's fun to see the different things that Xbox is like really doing, just like almost social media wise, like in that sense of like how they're framing everything for Game Pass. And this is why you need to be here on Game Pass to play your games on PC. I've really just enjoyed watching all of that go down.
Yeah, they were really, when I was reading this blog post, they were really feeling themselves in the opening paragraph. They were like, we at Xbox have a player-first strategy, and that means, you know, recognizing that you play in all these different places, and you play all these different types of games, and, oh, we just love the players. Like, I'm jaded, so I can't take a corporation seriously when they say shit like that, but, like, it is, like, from a cynical business point of view, they are putting players at the center of their business model. Obviously, out of, like, I want for money rather than I want for, like, actually making us happy for any reason. But, like, if money and player happiness go hand in hand, like, it's a win for everybody. So you can't fault Xbox for that. They're doing really good stuff. Like, Game Pass is just the best. And, yeah, their PC stuff has been getting better. As the years go on. I remember when the Microsoft Store was ass and everyone hated it when a game was coming out in the Microsoft Store.
I will say that much on the Xbox itself. That store needs to get an updated. It is just the worst. I can follow it, but it's right above the eShop that needs an update when it comes to buying shit online.
Mm-hmm. All right, here comes the beginning of the rants. Our next story comes from Jason Schreier at Bloomberg, so you know it's going to be a good one. Cyberpunk managers still win big bonuses after shoddy game launch. I love the way it opens this article. Hi everyone, it's Jason. Cyberpunk 2077 was the video games industry's biggest flop of 2020. He goes on to talk about the glitches and stuff, yet the executives who run the Polish studio that made the game will nonetheless receive millions of dollars in bonuses this year. The rest of the staff will also get bonuses, but some of them expected bigger ones, and may have gotten more if the game's release had been delayed until it was ready, as they'd asked. Yet Iwinski and co-CEO Adam Kaczynski are each slated to receive a bonus of 20 million zloty, which is $6.3 million. According to the company's annual report, Adam Badowski, a board member and director for Cyberpunk 2077, will take home $4.2 million. These bonuses, part of an annual profit-sharing plan, are based on the company's 2020 net earnings, which jumped more than 500%. Of CD Projekt Red's annual earnings, 20% is allocated to the profit-sharing bonuses, with 10% going to employees and 10% going to the board. Some employees told Bloomberg that they will receive profit-sharing bonuses of about $5,000 to about $9,000, while other more senior employees said they will get closer to $15,000 or $20,000. Managers and directors who likely receive much higher bonuses are likely to receive much higher bonuses. In a statement, a CD Projekt Red spokesperson said the company had allocated a total of $29.8 million to 865 employees for an average of about $34,000. In contrast, just five of CD Projekt's board members received bonuses totaling $28 million.
Jesus.
So, like, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Roughly the same amount, but, like, one's going between 865 people, the other's going, like, to five. When asked on the investor call last week whether it was appropriate for the board to take such hefty bonuses, Kaczynski said that the compensation had always been tied to the company's profits. We earned this money, and the company earned this money, of course, but more net profits, more bonuses, he said. We have results, we get bonuses, and that's the contract we have. There's more, as Jason says, but the basic story here is that the people who've been working on this game for anywhere between 4 and 8 years I've been expecting this big payout at the end when Cyberpunk 2077 eventually got released, and they got kind of drastically lowered because the higher-ups refused to delay the game when they were supposedly asking them to repeatedly to make sure it was finished and polished and ready to go. And so what Jason's trying to drive home is here is that the higher ups, the executives, they didn't make that much of a loss. They're still getting millions, while the little guy, the developer, the designers, yes, yep, not getting that much anymore because of a decision that they had no part in. And they've been working their asses off for 8 years.
Pay your devs.
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane to me. I've been reading the Awada Asks book, mm-hmm, and so it's been very interesting to like look through the eyes of Satoru Awada about how his management was. Like, he was more focused on the people and making sure that people were in the right place to do their job, because that was their strengths, and so people would want to come to work. You'd get more out of them, and everyone won. Mm-hmm. And it's just it's such a hard contrast now, listening to like CD Projekt Red, which we are, you and I, or at least me, I'll speak for me. We had it on a high pedestal. We mm-hmm. had them on a high pedestal because we thought that this was the developer that was like, no, we're going to take care of our devs. We're going to do this. And then Cyberpunk came out and we found out they lied to us.
Yeah.
And now with this, the earnings report and what's going on with the bonuses and whatnot, you're just like, holy hell. I mean, I get management, I get board of directors get paid more. I got that. I'm not fighting that one, but it's the idea that what would have happened if they did delay it 6 months?
Mm-hmm.
How much better would it have been? And yeah, I saw in chat, you're right. No Man's Sky, awful. Awful when it came out. But you know what Hello Games did? They shut up, went away, and came back and made the game what they promised. And we all look at it going, that's how you need to correct something. And now with it's just ooky now.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, it is just ooky to just kind of think about CDPR and how they've done this.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very interesting to bring up the No Man's Sky point, because like, yeah, a game can be about launch and get better over time. Where I think this is different is I don't know of that many studios that are like public like CDPR and at the stage at CDPR and have like these profit sharing schemes tied into their employee salaries. So like, I imagine a lot of people working at the team were like expecting this sizable payout by the end based on the success of Cyberpunk 2077 as the way profit sharing works. And so while the sales were still good at launch just because of pre-orders, and that generated to you, as they say, 2020 net earnings jumped over 500%. So they did, the whole company saw big revenue this year, and that did trickle its way down to developers. What the problem is that what I'm hearing is after the pre-order numbers, after the bad press, after Sony pulling it from the store and still not putting it back there, it nosedived. The sales completely nosedived and aren't likely to recover until this game gets fixed, which I haven't heard a whole lot about this game receiving positive reviews since then. So like, this is an annual thing. So like, if the game was released and it was good and it got a high Metacritic and it was still in the PlayStation Store, you'd be expecting yearly dividends paying off. Cyberpunk 2077 paying off year after year for these people who have been like long-term loyal to CDPR. That's just not going to happen now. The sales for like the following years are going to be pretty bad. And like, if Cyberpunk does get better, if the multiplayer component comes in, which they've actually cancelled now, I don't even mind saying that. If the DLC comes in and like it starts to get better, then yeah, the sales are going to creep up. But it doesn't help the fact that the sales have plummeted and they're going to have to work their way back up slowly now. Because CDPR has lost the trust of most of the hardcore gaming community, and it's going to be hard to try and sell them another game. Like, they got by releasing a game like every 5 to 8 years purely because they had goodwill with their fan base. Now they don't have that.
Yeah.
So selling games is all that much harder, which again will negatively affect the entire development team, and they'll not get the bonuses, which all of this, the point we're driving home here is that all of this could have been avoided.
All of it. 100% could have been avoided. And you bring up a good point. Like, we were just talking, like, I'm going to roll back up.
Mm-hmm.
7.8 million PlayStation 5s have been sold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
there's it's not this number, but there is a possibility that there are 7.8 million people. Well, no, actually, there are 7.8 million people who probably don't have Cyberpunk 2077 because it's off the PlayStation Store, which digital stores have increased. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you've literally cut off the biggest market, or Sony did, because of how the flop that was, how bad it was that you released CDPR. Mm-hmm. Like, it's insane to me that no one... why wasn't it released? And granted, yeah, I'm sure no one really thought of the idea of Sony pulling that. Mm-hmm. But if you were talking about it, because I remember you and I were talking about this in a podcast months ago, that they were like, oh, yeah, we focused on the high end graphics and we didn't really worry about the PlayStation 4 and all that stuff. And I'm like, who told you to release it then? Yeah. And I know it was the board of directors and all that stuff, but it all could have just been avoided by making common sense decisions. And I think that's what blows my mind. Mm-hmm. Is just you could have come out better and not lost all of your goodwill, because you're right. Finn, you're 100% right. It is. Everyone's going to take a look at whatever, even if it is a Witcher 4.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to take a look at CDPR and be like, you know what? I'll wait for it to go half off on Black Friday 2 years from now.
And yeah, like Jason mentions in the first paragraph of this article that like Cyberpunk is the meme machine now, and CDPR were talking in like their strategy meeting a few years weeks ago going forward. It's basically like trying to generate revenue in all the ways they can from these two big franchises, Witcher and Cyberpunk. And so like they were talking about how like the Witcher game series took off, and we had the Netflix series, we had comics, we had books, we had all this merchandise, we had every sector covered. And they're saying, like, they're going to do the same with Cyberpunk. Like, you can bet that the hype for the Edgerunners anime and any Cyberpunk merch and any Cyberpunk comics coming has way died down.
Gone.
And been completely soured by you deciding to not delay this game. By executives and, like... The few people that were under no illusions about this are the 800 or so employees at CDPR. Because, like, as Jason has mentioned in previous articles, like, it was becoming a meme. Like, they knew this game wasn't going to be ready by the time the executives were trying to shill it for. And it was like, yeah, this game isn't ready, and we all know that. And, like, why are they doing this? They were under no illusions about, like, what was in their limits and what wasn't. So this was... purely it just hurts to see like a few people making the decision that hurts so many in a year where, you know, no one's financially doing great. And Blue Bars as well made a point earlier, like, and as you were talking about Iwata, like the Japanese culture of taking a pay cut in years when you're not doing so well as a business, that's like the higher ups taking responsibility. Like, even
Activision Wii U, when the Wii U flopped, it was like we could all tell the Wii U was about to flop. Iwata and the board of directors all took a pay cut to mitigate people losing their jobs.
But like this past week, even Activision Blizzard CEO, like, this isn't just a Japanese thing, Activision Blizzard CEO took the 50% pay cut this week, and like, Activision are the devil. Activision are the money grubbing pieces of shit. But like, if they can do this, I don't understand why CDPR can.
You know what? That's now going to be a meme now. That's exactly. Are you like here's what Activision has done. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do now?
Yeah. They were a business that purely turned goodwill into profits, and now the goodwill's gone, and it's just, I don't know what the road back for CDPR and Cyberpunk is, but it's going to be a long road.
Yeah.
Speaking of Activision being the devil, Toys for Bob, the creators behind the Spyro Reignited trilogy, behind Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, are reportedly now supporting Call of Duty Warzone development.
Time out. Time out.
Okay. I'm frozen.
I know you're about to lose your shit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to sit
what
back.
Makes you say
might
that,
as well
John?
Go full screen on the video.
What
and,
makes you say that, John?
I will watch the feed. The floor is yours, my friend. I'm not even going
to... I thought you wanted to jump in. So first, I'll recap what exactly happened here. Crash 4 Studio This was first reported by Tom Ivan at VGC. Crash 4 Studio Toys for Bob is officially supporting Warzone development amid layoff claims. This is from the Toys for Bob Twitter. They announced that they are proud to support development for Season 3 of Call of Duty Warzone and look forward to more to come. Hashtag Let's Go Dev Squads. Hashtag Verdansk 84. And so yeah, that was them basically saying like, hey, we're not doing our own games anymore. We're just helping with this. And like people were saying, yeah, like, are you just doing that now? And it seems to be the case. Nicholas Cole, who worked for 3 years at Toys for Bob, says in reply to that tweet, it's the end of an era, but my wish is that former co-workers still at Toys for Bob all the best with what's ahead. Someone replied to him and says, I'm honestly just happy that the team is still getting to work at all. Life's kind of been rough right now, and I'd rather they'd have something to work on, something rather than being let go for some ridiculous reason. Basically like saying, hey, it's fine because they didn't fold the studio out right. Nicholas replied and said, same, although everyone I interfaced with and worked along was let go. I'm very glad it's not totally shuddering. Another employee confirmed that they left. Seems like there's a max exodus of basically the a lot of talented people have left this studio because they're not like being creatively fulfilled anymore, and this whole studio is being scaled down. Activision replied to a statement replying to the story. You can take it with the biggest grain of salt in the world. They say reports of layoffs at Toys for Bob are incorrect. There has not been a reduction in personnel recently at the studio. The development team is operating fully and has a number of full-time job openings at this time. The studio is excited to continue supporting Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, and more recently provide an additional development support for Call of Duty Warzone. So we've seen this pattern before. We saw it a few months ago. Vicarious Visions, yeah, who were behind the Crash and Sane trilogy remix, behind the Tony Hawk remix, both did successfully well for or really successful numbers in terms of sales and in terms of critical reception for Activision. They got completely gutted and moved to support Diablo development and Blizzard into things. Now the same is happening with Toys for Bob, who are supporting COD Warzone. Activision coming out and saying, hey, they're still the lead developer on Crash 4. Yeah, that means a lot considering the game is already out and there's no DLC plans. Like, yeah, they can still make patches for it, whatever. Nah, go fuck yourself.
I was about to be honest, about to ask, like is there
it's
any...
so soul-destroying because I get why they're doing it. It doesn't make me like it anymore. We've just seen this big disparity in years to come. When you look at, if you look at financials for games, just like money and games around the world, the, as we mentioned before on the show, like the console industry is still doing well. First party games and like big narrative single player games without like microtransactions are still doing well. But that, like, say that's like the big chunk of like what we would call like hardcore games or just like traditional games or whatever words you want to throw on it. Say that's the chunk. Microtransactions is way the fuck out here, and it's just going to completely eclipse anything you can do. And so what hurts the most is that I thought I understood Activision's point of view when, like, they're going to make CODs, they're going to make Skylanders, they're going to do Battle Royales, they're going to make money out of the ass of microtransactions. But they're not letting go of this side of their development, this more creative side, more traditional side, that's working on like these beloved remakes, these beloved games and beloved franchises, because they're still making money. Crash Remake made a lot of money. Spyro made a lot of money. Tony Hawk made a lot of money, and people are asking for more of all of those franchises. But here's the thing with Activision, and if we've learned one thing about executives and people in charge of these massive game companies, it's this, is that Activision don't want to make more money. Activision don't want to make a hell of a lot more money. Activision don't want to make the most money. These CEOs, these dipshits, will not be satisfied until they have made all of the money. And I'm not being hyperbolic when I say that. Like, they will not be satisfied. Even if Crash 4 sells, it was back in the NPDs this week in the top 20 because it was just released on Switch, which that version sucks. The PS5 version did well. Every remake they've done sold millions, and people are hungry for more. But they are completely willing to let that aspect of their business die, they are completely willing to let these talented individuals go, basically at gunpoint, because they're basically saying, hey, you're either going to make fucking dumb hats or shit for this Warzone, or you know what, you just got to quit, because you're not making your own games anymore, despite the fact that you've been an independent studio long before we've been around. And it's just so soul-destroying that they won't even let this part of their business exist, because it's not making enough money for them. It's making a lot of money, but it's not making enough. We have to put everyone on Warzone to hopefully have the time where we can compete with Fortnite, because these battle royales, these live service games, they live and die on how much content you can pump out on a weekly basis, how much updates you can go, how much hype you can build, how much social media you can spin. That all generates more revenue than could ever be done by just selling a video game. But here's the thing. Like, this fad, this battle royale thing, like, it's fine, and I don't hate on Fortnite, I don't hate on all these things, but, like, it's eventually going to go away, and that's just not because I wanted to. Like, the industry will move on, there will be a new, like, top thing, and maybe it's not the next thing or the thing after that, but one of these days the next big thing is going to be something that you can't attach the COD license to. It's going to be like, it's just going to be not a shooter. It might be MOBAs. It might be some other dumb thing that we can't even imagine yet. It might be VR, but like, you'll not be able to like just slap the COD franchise on everything and just make it work. And by then you will have lost all these talented studios. You will have lost faith in all these beloved franchises that people still want to play. And you'll just be left with this team that is like just grunts, just code monkeys, just putting out as much content as possible, adding new skins to guns, and like, yeah, that's really all I have to say. It's just absolutely soul destroying. No one liked this. No one liked this news. No one said, hell yeah, more updates for Cold Warzone. But it's fine, because the Noid is in the Crash mobile game, so we're fine. Like, it was making that's. The IP was making a lot of money on mobile as well. They won't even let that exist, because it's not a battle royale game.
Okay. First, let me ask a question. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I had to switch something out. Okay. You were full screen. So I was like, I hope you can still hear me.
Smooth.
Cool. All right. Second, I'm going to play Devil. One, let me first say this 100%. I 100% agree. I think this sucks. This is stupid. I don't understand why. Well, I do understand why, because I'm gonna put John's business hat on. Watch, this is a crazy thing to do, and I know you know. Let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
It is just, let's take video games out of it. Chat, I want to hear what you're gonna say too. Let's take business out of it. I have, or not business, but let's take video games out of this equation. I'm just gonna give you two products: product A and product B.
Mm-hmm.
Product A made $3 billion last year.
Mm-hmm.
Product B made how much last year, if it was Crash Bandicoot?
Oh, I have no idea. They will probably get it at the earnings call this time, if they even want to address it, if they even want to say, look how good this shit did, but we're going to stop making it.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It made money. People loved it. It was well received. And I'm 100% agreeing that we're going to lose all of the magic that is video games, because I'm with you. I haven't played Call of Duty in 7 years, I think 8 years. It's just not my jam anymore. But if I have something that is guaranteed $3 billion a year,
mm-hmm.
and while yes, the age of gamers has grown, they're now, the average gamer is in their 30s. I was the one that grew up on Crash Bandicoot. Mm-hmm. Like, that was my age group. And so it's one of those things, like, I get it. I have more spendable income, and I would rather play Crash Bandicoot or Tony Hawk or anything like that. That's me. But if I can get 1 million people to spend $3, $5, chip it away,
mm-hmm.
with these microtransactions between Call of Duty Mobile and anything else, Call of Duty, the microtransactions that are in there, if I can just chip away at it, a little bit here, a little bit there, but collectively I have everyone doing it, comparative to the one-time stop, which is a game, like, and games get patches and all that stuff. I understand that. I'm simplifying the hell out of this right now, but I'm going to give you a $60 game, and I get $60. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you a free game that's going to last forever, in a sense. It is a live-in game, and I'm going to ask, if you want to be cool or if you want to do anything, you're going to give me $2. You're going to give me $3. And I'm going to have multiple people do that over the length of time. Yeah, the Solus company is happening. That's what Activision is doing right now. And that's nothing. We have to speak about with the wallet. And what sucks, though, is that we've all said that. Vote with your wallet. Mm-hmm. We did. Unfortunately, the vote happened to be 3 billion versus whatever Crash Bandicoot actually had. So it's kind of one of those, what do you want to invest in kind of concepts. It's 3 billion over. I guarantee you, it'll make 3 billion again, at least 3 billion again in 2021. Mm-hmm. Or whatever Toys for Bob is going to do. Because it's that idea, and it sucks. I am 100% with you. I'm playing devil's advocate. If I'm going to iterate on something, and it's going to be little iterations, I'm going to give you a new gun, I'm going to give you a new map. We're using, and correct me, chat, I don't care, correct me if I'm wrong, using same code, updating it and whatnot, or ground up concept that is Crash Bandicoot, there's more development time going into it, which is more money up front, and then hopefully we recoup it on the back end, which is selling the game, or we iterate little by little, and then these the passes that come out, because I know Apex has a pass, so you pay $10 every season or anything like that, and I get millions of people, like Call of Duty has the same thing, I get millions of people who jump in because there is a more, and I'm gonna say it, and it sucks that I'm gonna say this, there is a more dedicated fan base for Call of Duty than there is Crash Bandicoot, and that sucks because without Crash Bandicoot we would not have Call of Duty. And we're getting to that point. You and I, a lot of us, are getting to that point that, yeah, we want these old games. We want them to come back because we want to remember nostalgia. But I've got 45 kids who are going to spend $10 in the next hour about Call of Duty, and I just made $450 like that. It sucks that business is going that way. And then, yeah, there's a Souls Corporation that's happening. Weirdly enough, that's probably what Xbox is doing now, too. They're just framing it different because we're remembering about the gamers. But it's the idea that money makes the world go round. I'm going to say it. It sucks. Money makes the world go round. No matter how much product B makes, if it does not make $3 billion like product A, this is a failure. And that's what sucks about business. That's what sucks about games in general, and that idea, because we've put a concept of, it has to make this much. Yeah. It has to do this for it to be a success. And we've got the underliers that are, oh, like, it's come back around. Like, this game, No Man's Sky, this game's come back around. They put the work into it, and it's a good game. But it is all, it's the money concept. It's $3 billion. $3 billion. I'm not going to put a bet on this. I would be shocked if Toys for Bob made a billion somehow.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, for sure.
And I'm factoring in Skylanders. Mm-hmm. I will factor in Skylanders on that. Like, I would be shocked if Skylanders and About Time, Crash Bandicoot 4 made $1 billion. Mm-hmm. And that is over the Xbox 360 era. That was PlayStation 3 to what we just got with Crash Bandicoot 4 last year. I would be shocked if that made $1 billion. But yet, I have a $3 billion shoe-in every 12 months.
Just because you said it at the end, first of all, there's no way that Crash 4 or the whole Crash saga since the remakes has made anywhere close to $1 billion. There's simply no way. I want to point out, because like Toy for Bob did work on Skylanders, Activision has two $1 billion franchises over the course of their history, Call of Duty and Skylanders. That's the two. But Skylanders got run into the ground. It will never make $1 billion again, so that's why they stopped making it.
Which sucks. I love Skylanders. I thought it was great. Yeah. I'll be absolutely honest. I love that game.
Yeah. But your reasoning, John, as to why this happens, like that's what makes me so mad, is because even if Crash 4 was somehow the best-selling game of the year, say it won the Game of the Year award and it was just selling on every system, there is simply no way that that model can beat the money that microtransactions and live service games are bringing in. It's simply not going to happen. However,
it still sucks.
What strikes me as insidious about that is that you're not even, like, you said it, like, Warzone made $3 billion, or, like, Call of Duty in general, I don't know what that stat is, made $3 billion last year. They're not willing to just, like, let that be that and have another successful thing growing here. And, like, they're just not willing to do that. They're saying, like, I don't care, we'll just move you all to Call of Warzone in the hopes of making $3.1 billion.
Exactly. It's the risk versus reward concept, and that's exactly what it is. And, like, let's be honest, Sony showed us a couple weeks ago that they're going to put more money into what they know. They're going to be very, at least from what we heard, what we read, and what Schreier has talked about, and everyone's reported that they're going to be very risk adverse. They're not going to go after, like, Returnal. Now I'm looking at Returnal. I'm playing it right now. That, to me, now falls under... That was a little more of a risk than I anticipated when it came to what Sony has been talking about. But, I mean... I'm not trying to alienate any kind of Crash Bandicoot fan. I'm really not. There's a fan base for it. Everyone's game. There's a favorite game. Someone's game is someone's favorite. I messed that up. But
yeah,
it's one of those things. Like, it's a sure thing. Mm-hmm. And so, I agree. Like, why don't you take some of that $3 billion... and put it into Toys for Bob to give us something new, or give us Spyro 4 or some crap like that. I'm fine with that. I think that would be great.
Yeah.
Yet we're going to turn around and put that $3 billion into God knows what, because it's Activision. I don't know. Maybe that's what they're using to fund Overwatch 2. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But why not take a piece of that pie, funnel some money into it, and grow out another franchise, which will take a little bit. It'll take a little bit of time. I got that. I'm okay with it. As a manager, as a CEO, if someone, like, you have to build something for it to make money?
Yeah.
I've got Call of Duty running fine. It is good. That's great. Let's take a little bit of that pie, feed it to something else, and let that grow. And maybe, hopefully, 5 years from now, it is not making the Call of Duty money, but it's making a streamline of revenue for us. And then we just, like, all right, let's do it again. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand the concept of not doing more for the people who enjoy those franchises. Like, how well freaking Crash Bandicoot 4 did. Mm-hmm. Between Crash Bandicoot 4, just the full on remakes, and how much people love CTR and how well it did. I'm actually shocked that they were like, all right, let's keep on going down. Not the rabbit hole, but let's keep on doing stuff with this. People like it. It made us money. Let's keep on going. And then this happened. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it sucks. And then it's also, it's money. And Activision, what do they want to do? You're right. They want to make 3.1 this year.
Yeah.
Next year, 2022, they're going to want to make 3.2. Mm-hmm. And they're going to put it in the sure thing. And this $3 billion was made off of Call of Duty Mobile, Call of Duty Warzone, and Black Ops Cold War.
Yeah.
Three things. Mm-hmm. All in the same property. Mm-hmm. Three things made them $3 billion.
Mm-hmm. But, this is what gets me. I want to clear up any misunderstanding. Like, this... The Crash thing makes me mad. The fact that we're simply not going to get any Crash Bandicoot games anymore for the foreseeable future, it makes me mad. But it's not what I'm angry about in this story. I'm more upset that Activision is so quickly to throw away all this talent with Vicarious Visions as well, and Toys for Bob. And as people have mentioned in the chat, like, there are countless studios in the past they've done this with. And it's like, Sony are risk averse, yes, but the reason I'm not mad about that story is, like you said, things like Returnal, with their first party, with their big three or four, yes, they are risk averse. They are doing things that they know will be massive hits. But with their second-party partnerships, they're throwing out money in there in the hopes that, like, Kojima can make his weird thing. And yeah, it might only be, like, a 78 on Metacritic. But hey, that's fine. Like, we're just, like, throwing money out there in the hopes that, like, we can strengthen the PlayStation platform. Hey, we're going to throw some money at Jade Raymond's new studio. We don't know what they're going to make, because they're not a studio yet. well, does that sound like risk averse? Doesn't sound like it to me. And Returnal literally like thanked them in the blog post, thanked Sony for like taking a risk on them when no other publisher would take on them after Next Machina. They thanked them for specifically taking a risk with this game. With Activision, they are like, as I've mentioned, like they had a billion-dollar franchise before on Skylanders, and they ran it into the ground. And it's not likely, but the same thing could just as easily happen to Call of Duty. They could make so, as you said, they have three big properties right now, all Call of Duty based. If they keep going to that thing, people are going to get worn out eventually. And you're not going to be able to slap COD on a new game anymore and expect it to sell as well or do as well as it has. It's just not going to happen. And when that day inevitably comes, what do you have left? Because you could have siphoned money into these up-and-coming studios with this just great talent and great passion, but you decided, no, it all has to be centered around this one thing. It has to be centered around what's making the most money right at this moment, right now, and not thinking about the future, not thinking about bringing in this new talent, because, like, you can really only see it when, like, you're someone like me, or, like, I probably don't even see it in the Tony Hawk games. The amount of love and care and passion and just absolute, like, nailing every single detail that these people put into these games. It doesn't matter whether whether this story was, hey, we're not making a Crash game ever anymore. We're not making a Spyro game ever. It's not the losing these old franchises necessarily, though that does suck. If they said, hey, we're not going to sell any more Crash, but Toys for Bob are making their own thing now, that I would be happy with that. It's Toys for Bob, it's these studios, it's these talents that Activision are just throwing away. That's what gets me riled up right now, because they just simply don't care about creativity or talent. They just care about their big product, which is called their cash cow.
Yeah. And it sucks.
Yeah. We got to move on at some point, so I'll just leave it at that. Let's talk about something positive, and we talked a little bit about Sony previously in the podcast. We had a State of Play this week, focusing on Ratchet and Clank and two other indie games. John, did you watch this presentation? Did you get a chance
to? I did. I actually watched it that Thursday when it happened.
My God, Rift Apart looks amazing.
Oh, shit, dude. I have never played a Ratchet and Clank game. I am excited for this. Mm-hmm. It's stupid how pretty this game is.
Yes. Yeah. The ray tracing, I love Rivet. I just love the sheer amount of character. This State of Play was so great for so many reasons. The amount they were driving home about, like, how this is a next-gen game, this is shit you couldn't do. They were constantly hammering home the DualSense, and, like, the first shot they were showing you this gameplay, like, the amount of shit going on in the background, ships just, like, going around and people flying up, and then the Rift mechanics, oh my God, I want it.
That is insane to me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I was doing the same thing as I was watching this. I was like, the next gen to me is the stuff in the background, like everyone moving around, all the particle effects going on, and just like this is a next gen game. This is with the power of the PlayStation 5.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those things like, damn, this is way too pretty not to go play and enjoy. And then just you're right, the Rift mechanic alone. Mm-hmm. I don't know what like Black Magic Insomniac pulled off, and the fact that they had the balls to go, oh yeah, this isn't just like a little section of a level. No, you're in the world. Mm-hmm. We literally just made we teleported you into this new world from this rift. This is not just a section. I'm like, how did you do it?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I tweeted out after the State of Play that like once it sat with me and I was like absorbing it, I was like, I think people are finally starting to get State of Play, in that I wasn't seeing too many complaints about like, oh, why is there no Silent Hill? Where is God of War? They're really good at like messaging these things, and like, I'm finally starting to like see the major benefit of having these like one game, like really short focused State of Plays. Because like for me personally, I knew Ratchet Clank was coming. I knew it was going to be fun. I knew it was probably going to pick it up on launch day. But it was always this thing where I was like, okay, I've seen enough. You've sold me on it. It's like, it's like Returnal was for a long time, actually, where I was like, okay, I've seen it. You have me, all right? You don't need to show me anymore. But like,
I'll buy this game. Just shut up about it.
And that's where I was at coming into the State of Play, where I was like, I don't think I can take 15 minutes of this game. But then by the end of it, I was like more excited than I've ever been for it.
Yeah.
And just because like it was this whole, we haven't seen it for a while, this like long E3 style, like taking mm-hmm. you through the gameplay sort of presentation like that. And it was, it really reminded me like how useful that format is, because just like being able to like just show these like beautiful vertical slices, like combat, exploration, these cutscenes, these environments, it just really got me going in the best ways.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so good.
And I think you're right, because it's one of those things, like we get inundated so much about games and like, here's this and here's this teaser and watch this and here's this. And what Insomniac did for Rift Apart was concise. It was smooth. It made me more excited about a game that I was actually excited about to begin with. And it was damn near perfect when it came to just, here is what we're going to show you. We're going to talk about Ratchet and Clank and let's have fun with it. Like, I'll be honest, I did not know we were going to talk about, like, they were going to talk about the other two games we're about to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I thought it was just Ratchet and Clank.
No, yeah.
So I was a little like, oh, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. And then they just jumped into Ratchet and Clank. They gave you what we want to know, a little bit of combat, a little bit of, we're doing some fun stuff with this. Here is a new character. You're welcome.
Yeah.
And that's all it needed.
Uh-huh. The yeah, as you mentioned, they did show off two other games at this event. As I mentioned, like I saw like not a lot of complaining about like the state of play and what was at it and how focused it was. Just like because like people are starting to get it now. Other than of course the bare minimum of those people in the middle of the Venn diagram that I'll never understand how like they're watching state of play live. They know when it's happening. Yeah. They're watching it live, but also don't read the blog post telling you what's going to be at the state of play, like explicitly. Like when they come out and say, we're showing you Ratchet and Clank, or showing you quick looks of two indie games. And they're like,
yeah,
I'm expecting the works. And it's like, I don't, who are these people? But yeah, as I mentioned, they showed this off at the end, but first they showed off Subnautica Below Zero, a quick trailer for that releasing May 14th. Are you a Subnautica guy? Did you play Subnautica?
I have not. I know I grabbed it for this play at home thing. So I've heard good things. And if you don't like the ocean, it'll freak you out.
Yeah.
I don't like the ocean, so I'm kind of interested to play it.
The freaky penguins look cool. And then they announced finally that Among Us is coming to PS4/PS5 in 2021. And there was those cute little Ratchet and Clank cosmetic skins. Just fine. Yeah. Just totally. Yep. That's okay. I would have been. I didn't think of it until after, but when they said indie games, like afterwards, I thought, man, what if it was Hades? What if they just dropped Hades? But yeah, I'm glad I wasn't thinking that going into it, because then Among Us would have been mad. But yeah, it's about time this game. So yeah, just a really, really good state of play. Those one game focused state of plays are really starting to come into themselves, I think. And yeah, I think that's probably the last one we're going to get before their E3 thing or their summer thing, whatever they do.
I think so too. I guess June is next month. That's weird. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we won't get anything until June for E3 when it comes to Sony. I think everything should be quiet for a little bit and then just let's pedal the metal E3. Just give us a beautiful week where we don't know what's going on and we all have to go back and take a look at everything and just enjoy it all. I'm excited.
Yeah. Because we focused a lot on rants, we're going to do a lightly round of these even more news stories. So first off, we need to address something that happened a while ago. Discord has officially ended talks with Microsoft. That was the bet we made a while ago. It didn't happen, and yeah, it's what we expected. If we didn't hear anything soon, it was going to fall apart, and yeah, it looks like it's falling apart. It seems like Discord is going to end up eventually going the public listing route, just put it in the stock market and get money that way. Because it's good being independent, and so that's officially the way that's going. Something weird's happening with Midnight Club, John.
What is this?
So Rockstar, someone on Twitter found out that Rockstar delisted all of their games on Steam and then slowly started relisting them. But then when they relisted them, they actually accidentally put Midnight Club 2 back on there, even though that hadn't been on sale for years. And then they were like, oh shit, okay, take it back down. Some people got in and bought it and left reviews and they were like, thanks for the mistake, I guess. The reason they don't have it up is because of like the same reason like GTA goes after a while. It's the music licensing stuff in those games that make it an issue. You have to keep renegotiating those. And then out of nowhere, Midnight Club Los Angeles Complete Edition was relisted on the Xbox Marketplace. And that's not been taken down yet.
I assume
that's not a mistake. That report came from Eurogamer saying Rockstar's Elusive Midnight Club Los Angeles got relisted on the Xbox Marketplace. It's a surprise because Rockstar hasn't signaled the game's re-release, but something is definitely stirring within Rockstar because this news comes just a few days after Rockstar delisted Midnight Club 2 on Steam, as we mentioned. And this is the commentary from Wesley over at Eurogamer. I can't see any Midnight Club games currently listed on the PlayStation Store or Steam. The last Midnight Club game was in 2008, was Midnight Club Los Angeles, and the complete edition came out in 2009. What's stirring, John? What's happening with Midnight Club?
I don't know. This one is this
worthy? I'm going to bring it out. We're going to bring out the rumor end dates, and we're going to decide where we want this to be.
All right, let's do it.
So, it's again the music thing for me, but like they were able to do it with Tony Hawk and get all the music in there, and even add some new ones. So I'm thinking what's happening right now is there's a secret arms race going on between Take-Two and
Rockstar.
There's a secret arms race going on, and like someone's remastering Need for Speed Underground, and someone's remastering the Midnight Club games, and I'm just waiting to see who pulls the trigger first. Either way, I'm happy. If next year we get like Need for Speed Underground 2 and Midnight Club 3 remastered, I'm a happy camper. So I'm willing to put this at a tantalizing teal. I can't give it any more spice purely because I kind of pulled this out of thin air. But
no, you know, I'll follow you on that one. Yeah. I agree. It's and I like this idea of the race mainly because, and I know it's a completely different racing genre in that sense. But since we're not getting a Gran Turismo, I'm hoping like EA and they're just like, all right, we got to get one out. We have an opening. Let's get it out right now. Let's go. Yeah. And I want both of these games like at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. I would love that so much because I played the shit out of Midnight Club. I loved that game.
Midnight Club 3 Dub Edition remix, and I will accept nothing less. Kale Cunningham here with the Discord news tidbit. Discord has officially walked back the NSFW server ban on iOS. Users can now opt in to see not suitable for work servers on iOS. Oh. Didn't even know that was a thing.
Well, there you go.
But they've walked back.
I didn't either.
Sega announces... Oh, John, I'm sorry.
Oh, God.
This is another quick...
Do we want to rant about this?
This is another quick rant. Sega announces that they're going to start selling NFT content via Cade Onder at Screen Rant. This comes actually out of a tweet that Sega made in Japanese, but it's translated. In collaboration with DoubleJump.Tokyoko Limited, we will start selling non-fungible token digital contents that utilize the blockchain technology around the summer of 2021. John, let me take you through my process of thinking here.
Please do.
What is the biggest sort of game associated when you think of Sega as a franchise?
Yakuza, duh.
Okay, what is the actual mascot of Sega then?
Sonic.
Okay, Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yes.
Taking out all the 3D bullshit, right? What was the original pitch for Sonic as a character in the world he lives in? So who does Sonic
fight?
Who does Sonic fight?
Like just a hedgehog that goes fast.
No, like who's Sonic's arch rival?
Dr. Robotnik.
Right, Dr. Robotnik.
Or Eggman, whoever you want.
An evil doctor who goes into this wilderness and turns all the wildlife into robots and ruins the environment with toxic waste.
Yes.
Sega, completely not realizing the irony of their biggest franchise, is deciding we're going to kill the environment with NFT content. Oh.
I have nothing to say to that because that is genius. I don't like.
It's not. It was the first thing I thought of. I was like, they're doing NFT stuff. I don't understand it. Right? Okay. It's for those who are like me, who are stupid around NFTs. Basically, it's a way of saying like, as you mentioned in the beginning of this podcast, you were like, you don't actually own digital content. Like, it's just you buy the license to use it. This is. Yeah. NFTs are like this new trendy thing where people are like using blockchain technology to make sure like you have the official rights to digital copies of stuff, and it's become a thing that bands are going in on and artists are going in on, and it's really fucking dumb because it doesn't make any sense. It's bytes. It's ones and zeros. You can't own it. End of story, right? And so
it is ones and zeros, and I'll let you finish.
Yeah, and the problem arises with, like, you could say, okay, just let them be stupid and think they own the dumb digital thing. The problem arises is that people say this is really fucking bad for the technology based off of how much power consumption, how much computing it uses. Someone even put out there that creating like one NFT token for something, for like an average thing, on average, it generates the same amount of fossil fuel burning as driving 500 miles in a gasoline-powered car. So that's what we're dealing with here. And Sega are going to start selling these things out the wazoo starting summer 2021. Probably some of them Sonic branded. And I hate capitalism. I really do. It's... What? Yeah.
Do we need to buy like a Skies of Arcadia one for Keith, though?
Well, I refuse. Even if... That was the other thing I'm reading this article. Square Enix are doing it soon as well. There might be Final Fantasy VII NFTs.
Yep.
Another game where there's heavy environmentalism implications. And they're just completely ignoring it. It's so maddening, John. I'm just... Do you have anything more to say on this? Because I really want to move on.
The only thing I actually do like about the NFTs is... when they do get sold, like if I buy a Sonic NFT when this goes live and then I sell it to you, Sega will make money from my sale to you.
Mm-hmm.
So for artists who actually are doing this, like actual, I don't want to call Sega not an artist, but you know, like actually selling art that way, they still get a kickback. Because usually in physical art, I sell you this Couch Capade sticker.
Yeah.
I make money off of it. You sell it again on eBay. I make nothing off of it. And that's the only thing I actually like about NFTs. Past that, they're weird.
Yeah.
And just the actual, like you said, the fossil fuel thing is just a digital concept that's not taking up space is causing this much damage.
So... people in chat, like, I don't understand either. I'm not an expert in this stuff. I'm basically like taking what I'm told from people. But the way I understand it is to create the digital signature and to make sure you can't like forge it, to make sure it's like airtight for like, because like people need to be sold on this concept that you can actually own a digital thing. It takes an immense amount of computing power to generate that digital signature. And depending on how many of these you're selling, it can just exponentially increase the amount of damage it's doing to the environment with the amount of power you're consuming for nonsense, right? I don't get why this is rich people trying to be rich and trying to show, like, I get the...
And we've come back to the $3 billion idea.
I get the thing where, like, you go into a rich person's house and you're like, here's a fucking Monet on my wall. You can see it. It's mine. It's an original. I bought it. But for these dumb... these geniuses to think that they own... a collection of bites.
Oh, Finn is getting spicy, everyone, and I love it.
We're moving on. Epic has acquired ArtStation. ArtStation is...
And we're done!
ArtStation is like LinkedIn for artists, for those in like the media industry who make films and TV and stuff. They can show off their art. They can like plug their stuff. Epic's bought them. There's apparently some sort of integration with Unreal. ArtStation are keeping their like independent branded stuff, and the site's going to work the same as it has for a long time. The Epic acquisition and putting too much into it, but yeah, that's just another taking Sony's money and buying stuff with it.
Thank you, Sony, for investing in us. We appreciate it.
Konami will not be ready to present at E3 via their official Twitter.
What?
They said, we want to reassure our fans that we are deep in development on a number of key projects, so please stay tuned for some updates in the coming months. So yeah, this was interesting to me. This was something I was keeping an eye on, where like E3 announced their publisher partners and Konami was on that list. I was like, are they having a conference? Are they just kind of giving the thumbs up to E3 as a concept? It seems like they were thinking about it, but it just doesn't seem like they're ready. But this is more of a hint that Konami are actually making video games than we've had in a long time. The fact that they're saying, like, you could just come out and say, we're not presenting at E3. But what they actually said was, we're not ready. And we have key projects in development. So,
Hey, is it Scully? I think it was. It came out last year, 20. It was Scully, and that was like Scully. Konami's first game, and that wasn't like the Castlevania collection or anything like that. It's on the Switch. I bought it on the Switch because I was like, oh my Scully. God, Konami brought a. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not Konami published. I don't know where you got that.
I'm with you on that read of just they're actually making games. Are we getting another Castlevania? I don't know.
Yeah, I think I don't want to say it jinx it, but it rhymes with Battle Deer.
I believe if a game that rhymes with Battle Deer is coming out, it should be by a company that rhymes with Snoo Point.
Yeah, 100%.
That's the best I can come up with.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah.
Fortnite's cash cow is PS4 and not iOS. This came out because of the ongoing court case with Apple and Epic Games. But it seems like PlayStation 4 generated 46.8% of Fortnite's total revenues, followed by Xbox One, and then PC, Android, Nintendo Switch, iOS, all below that.
Yeah.
So, like, and iOS made $700 million in a year, in the 2 years, before they got taken off. So, like, I can only imagine what the fuck money they're making on PS4. I assumed, because the mobile gaming industry, I assumed that more money would be coming from it, but no, consoles are the big seller for Fortnite. Even more than PC, which is surprising. Speaking of PlayStation second-party partnerships, as we have, there's another new partnership coming with Firewalk Studios. However, this one is to create a new original multiplayer IP. I think Jim Ryan said in a few interviews ago, like, yeah, we want to see like more multiplayer PlayStation Studios games on the PS5. So yeah, this is part of that. This is another one where it's like Sony is taking risks because multiplayer isn't necessarily their forte. So they're just letting the studio do what it does. They're willing to take risks with their second party partnerships and their investments. It's just interesting to see how that will go. Because, yeah, as I mentioned, like Xbox have, for their first party for a long time, have been like multiplayer heavy. Sony not so much. Yeah. So it's interesting to see where this goes. And last, but certainly not least, Stadia have added a search bar to their web app.
We did it, guys. We did it. Congratulations, Stadia.
John Stadia.
Welcome to 1998.
Stadia just seems to be getting better and better with each blog post they make. I don't know where they could go from here.
Look, it is called, like, you iterate a little bit at a time. You don't give everything to everyone, mm-hmm. little by little.
Yeah.
And then that's how you win. That is exactly how you win.
What perplexes me, John, is, like, Google as a company whose primary business is a search engine, right? So they have the lock on this. They were clearly working hard on this search capability for Stadia for a long time, for, like, a year and a half, right? They only just now were able to add it. I was trying Xcloud earlier today. They somehow have a search bar. How did they do that?
Look, you know what? It's one of those things. We gotta look at what we're doing.
They must have been working on it for even longer.
Number one and number two search engines in the world. But Stadia, we need to figure out how the search bar actually needs to work. What's the font? How big does it need to be? Is it opaque? Is it white? Do we change it with like the color of Stadia in the UI? Yeah. Is it dark mode? These are things that we need to take. How long has Stadia been around? 2 years? We need to take the time to figure that out. Mm-hmm. Stadia out.
John, if they had just like added a search bar and not told anybody, this wouldn't be such a big a meme. They made a fucking blog post about it. They said Stadia has added a search bar. That is our update for today. Like, it's, what's wrong with them? What's Google up to? Like, so many smart people earn so much money. John, we finally get to have some fun on this podcast and not just yell at things. Because we're going into our new ending segment. Obviously, Fantasy Press Conference Ultimate Showdown ended last week. And so we now have our new segment. This new segment that we'll be doing in the next few weeks in our podcast is called Amidst Us.
I have no idea what we're doing.
It is worth noting that Amidst Us is a wholly original IP by the Playhouse team and is not linked in any way to any other products, games, or otherwise that might be out there. It's a wholly original IP, and if you try to sue me, I'll sue you back. Amidst Us is quite simple. I've looked at the listings for games that have released on the past week across all storefronts. I have taken a list of these games, their titles, and I have accumulated them. I've also added in one imposter game of my own creation that is a fake game. I'm going to tell you the title of these games. The basic premise is you'll need to determine which one I have made up. Now, but before this goes, you'll have some opportunities to like filter your search a little. So I'm going to tell you the titles of all the games. And then you're going to have like three lifelines, same as you have on like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. You're going to be able to ask me for the text description of one of these games. You're going to be able to ask me for a description of the key art for one of these games. And you're going to be able to ask me to read out a review for one of these games. You can mix and match whatever you want, way you want to do it. But those are your three lifelines to figure it out. There are five games.
Jesus.
Number one is Trash Quest. Number two, Battle Axe.
Battle Axe?
Yeah. Number three, Boris the Rocket. Number four, Ant Venter. And number five, Jolt and Bolt.
So for the next round, when we do this, because I love this, I need you to go ahead and get like send those to me when we do it so I know, like, keep them track in my head. Because I was like, wait, what are they again?
I can remind you. So Trash Quest, Battle Axe, Boris the Rocket, Ant Vendor, and Jolt and Bolt. What one of those do you want to learn more about? The purpose of this game is twofold. It's to actually get a look at some games that don't get a lot of love and are actually quite cool. The second is to fuck with you. So that's the purpose of this. So yeah.
I want to use my give me the description of what the fourth one. What was the fourth one that you read to me?
Ant Venter.
Give me the description of that one.
Ant Venter is a point-and-click adventure game. You find yourself in a photorealistic macro world where you immediately manage to ruin the life of the main character, Ant, and foil all his plans for making his dream come true. Can you help get everything back in order?
Okay.
Was that one that you thought, like, that was from the titles you were like, this is probably the fake one, or were you trying to rule it out?
I'm actually trying to rule it out. Okay. I will tell you right now, I've got your speech pattern down pretty well, so I'm trying to find how you're going to talk about these games and see if you figure it out. Like, my game is to play you to see if I can figure out which game is
If you can pick up the keys from me, that's totally a fair game. I just need to try harder.
Okay.
So you have the ability to...
Give me the review of the trash one.
Trash one, okay. This comes from Abderg on Steam. A very good Metroidvania.
Oh, come on. We're doing Steam reviews? All right.
It's user reviews. All
right.
A very good Metroidvania about a raccoon getting to the trash on a spaceship. The movement takes a moment to get used to, but it's really fun after a bit. I love how the upgrades open up and new shortcuts to get back into, and the side challenges for optional upgrades were a nice change of pace. The level design was laid out very well, and the map made sure you always knew where to check to get a new power up. Any help from that? You have one more lifeline, which is be describing the art for either the real game or the game that I've made up.
For some odd reason, the trash game, I want to say I've heard of. I needed that because I wanted to see how, I'm also seeing how you're actually going to play this and what your hints are going to be. All right, so I get key art for one more. Name me the three I haven't had anything with.
Battle Axe, Boris the Rocket, and Jolt and Bolt.
Give me the key art for Jolt and Bolt.
All right, so on the left is like this dude with like bright yellow, like spiky hair. He's like holding this like sword made of light, on the right, there's like this robot dog with glowing red eyes. And then in the background, okay. in the bottom, you could see like this like cityscape pixel art. And then on the top, like in the background, you could see this like blue woman with like this big sinister grin. And she's like draped in shadows.
Okay. So that one is probably going to be the least helpful to me.
Mm-hmm. So I'll recap the titles of the games again so you can make your decision. Since this is first week, I'm willing to give you a baby lifeline and like cut one of the games that are real at this point.
Okay.
Do you want me to do that or do you think you've got it?
No, just give me the names one more time. I think I might actually have this.
Trash Quest, Battle Axe, Boris the Rocket, Ant Venter, and Jolt and Bolt.
I don't know. I think it's Jolt and Bolt. Like I everything else seems right. Your Steam review actually was very specific. Also, the description of the fourth one was very descriptive. The Boris the Rocket, that triggered in my head, so I've heard of that in some way, shape, or form. I have it actually narrowed down to 2 and 5, and I'm gonna go with Jolt and Bolt.
You got me. Jolt and Bolt is not a real game. everything else is real. My description for Jolt and Bolt was that I made up. In the sappy adventure, play as a live wire action hero Jolt as he embarks on a quest to save Grid City. Along with his loyal companion Bolt, team up to defeat Aqua and reclaim your home. Experience 2D side-scrolling like you've never played before with a system we call power platforming. The idea was
okay,
that it
you
was
know
just
what,
a-
you doing that one. That's you're pretty damn good. Now I'm gonna have to play listening to you a little bit different now because if I asked for that one,
yeah,
because that's the one I didn't want to ask about. Like I wanted like the key art actually now is gonna help me more now. I'm thinking about it.
Yeah,
because that's actually a pretty good description. That would have at least like made me question my decision a little bit more. Okay.
So yeah, the other games like Trash Quest looks kind of cool. Looks like a short game, but like you're playing this little raccoon who's like cleaning up trash and stuff. Battle Axe is like, I don't know if it's any good, but it's just like this weird beat 'em up game with like sort of reminds me of Golden Axe. Maybe that's
Golden Axe,
the play they're doing. But yeah, they have like a wizard and a rogue and a dwarf looking guy with big muscles. Boris the Rocket is you're like this Soviet missile nuclear operator. And you have to defend like this nuclear base
okay,
from
cool. I have heard of that
from
one
from bears so. And shit. Ant Venter looks actually really cool. It's like I said, a point and click adventure game, and like you're just a little ant. And the art style like is like photorealistic, and it looks really fucking cool. I think it was on iOS and stuff, and like mobile. So
okay,
that's like half the joy of this game is I get to find out about these like weird games I wouldn't have seen otherwise.
Yeah,
I might pick up Trash Quest because like £2. It looks cool. But yes, you managed to get me in the first ever one of these. I need to step up my game, I guess. I guess I was pretty sus. So yeah, that's our show for this week. If you're listening to this on podcast services or YouTube, watching it on YouTube, you should know that we do this live every week from our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/playhouselive. You can come in the chat, hang out with us, stick around for the post show that we're going to do where the chat asks us questions. You only get that on Twitch. If you are watching, you should know that you can, if you prefer listening to podcasts, you can listen to this on Spotify and watch it on YouTube later when we upload those afterwards. We do this on Saturdays every week at 4 p.m. Central Time, 10 p.m. UK time. And yeah, that's our show for this week. We're going to be back next week with another one of these. But in the meantime, stick around for the post show, Twitch chat Q&A, and for podcast listeners, we'll see you next week.